accession number 26736, Reel 2.
Albert Hughes, Reel 2. So quite a pleasant sort of job, really.
Well, yeah, yes, really it was. Yeah. I mean, it was quite nice, quite good.
And I imagine at that time there was quite a sense of urgency about getting these searchlight people trained.
Oh, yes, yeah, yes. And, of course, some of these other people, you see, as I said, there was various groups. Some were three, we were three, some were six. And, I mean, I presume that others went to the ACAC, the gun side of the civil defence. But, oh, yes, as I say, of course, naturally, they wanted, you know, to get these more searchlights to try and protect London from these bombers.
Do you remember any of the officers at Butler's Cross?
Oh, dear.
It's a long time ago, I think.
Oh, yes, no. It was part of the 306 Regiment. I'm wrong there, sorry. There was three batteries in the regiment. We were in 304 battery, or connected to 304 battery. And then you had 305, 306, and 390. That made the that made up the regiment of, I think, the 26th Searchlight Regiment, because there was four batteries in a regiment. And we was quite happy there, and so we all the major in charge was a Major Alexander, and I think he was in Civvy Street, because as I say, it was a territorial unit, and I think in Civvy Street he was an engineer on the railway. But he was very, 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 you know, he was a wonderful man, really. Anyway.
Nice, was he?
Pardon?
He was nice, wasn't he?
Oh, yes, yes, yeah, yes. Yeah. You know, in a disparate way. But then, you see, he was in Civvy Street and was called up with the territorials at the beginning of the war. And then we were generally quite happy. So the three of us, we applied to be transferred from our place at Aldershot, you know, the 50th Anti-Tank Regiment, to the unit here, of course, thinking, oh, well, we're here for the rest of the war, sort of thing. And but anyway, soon after that, we got orders, our particular battery, 304, got orders to go overseas. And
what did you feel about that?
Well, I suppose there we took it as for granted. There was only one thing I didn't care for, because I couldn't swim, you see. But anyway, we, equipment was all packed up, and this, that, and the other, and that went out to the Middle East.
These were your two-pounders, were they, or?
Well, yeah. Well, no, sorry. We're in searchlights now.
Right, I'm with you.
Mm-hmm. When we left Aldershot, we left the gun side of it, and we were in searchlights.
Yes.
And, they had sound indicators, which was three sounds along in a line, and three, one horizontal and up. And then, of course, these were connected to the searchlights. And then when they heard a plane, the sound equipment would turn, and when they switched on the searchlight, it would go straight up to the plane. It was quite a new, but they're always trying to improve their equipment, and so, this was an improvement.
So what training have you done on
searchlights? None at all.
So were you going to be doing a clerical role, or were you going to be
on searchlights? Well, that is what happened. We went up to Fleetwood prior to going overseas, and we were going out to the Middle East on the Empress of Britain. But the Empress of Britain was sunk coming into Liverpool, And so we had to wait until, and they had a New Zealand meat ship, the Tamaroa, and they converted that into a, we only had one deck of the, I think there was some, you know, decks, some cabins up above for officers, etc. But we just had this one deck, below deck, and hammocks, or some of us slept on the tables, mess tables and hammocks. And as I say, we left, we came down from Fleetwood to Liverpool, and we left Liverpool 7 days before Christmas, 1940.
So off you all went. Had you any idea where you were going?
Well, no, not apart from out to the Middle East. But of course then, you see, in those days, we had to go, we more or less went out from Liverpool, across the North Atlantic, to off the American coast, and then south, and then presumably opposite Central America somewhere, or South America. We crossed over to Freetown, to you know, re-establish our water supplies. There was no ports at Freetown. Thank you. So it was all brought out on lighters to there, and then we went from Freetown down, and we had 4 days rest at Durban.
Did you?
Very nice. All the English people in Durban, they, you know, came out, come down to the docks, picked up perhaps two of us, or two here and two there, and took us to their homes and gave us, oh yes, it was wonderful, really.
Whose home did you go to?
I don't know now. I don't forget. I don't remember that. Not
they
really.
Looked after you, what they
oh yes, yes. And then they brought us back, you know. I suppose we had... Oh, possibly from 10 until 4, you know, leave off the boat, and then they brought us back in the evening, or the late afternoon. And I think we were there about 3 or 4 days. And then, of course, we left Durban, and we went up. Well, of course, on the back of these merchant ships or troop ships, there was always a gun. And, of course, as I say, I was in the Royal Artillery, and so there was... You know, I forget now many of us. But as we went up towards the Horn of Africa, there was, of course, the Italians had still got Eritrea, and they were expecting trouble. So we had to, the gun crew had to sleep on the gun deck, you know, in case we were caught up by anybody. And then, of course, we went round, no trouble. One of the ships in the convoy left to go to Mombasa. And then the rest of us went to... south of Suez, I can't think of the name at the moment. The Port Toothache. Port Toothache. And then, you know, we had to disembark. We got on a train then and took us through to... Giza, that's where the pyramids are. And of course there we were under canvas, waiting, expecting, and eventually they were expecting to go to Greece. But when it was decided to go, oh, we'd moved in the meantime to Alexandria, and so we were going to, as I say, over to Greece. But then as Greece was falling, they sent us to Crete. And, of course, that was round about the end of February, yeah. 1941.
So how long were you in North Africa then?
Well, more or less, roughly about a month, I should think.
And where did you leave North Africa? Which port? Was that Alexandria?
Well, yes, we moved from Giza, which was near Cairo, where the pyramids are, and the Sphinx. And then we went to Alexandria, and always remember the ablution hut in Alexandria where you had a shower. I don't know where it was coming from, but it was very, very, of course, it was quite hot there, and of course, as I say, the water felt very, very cold No, but anyway, as I say, then we went, I think, on the Ulster Prince over to Crete.
So what did you know about Crete? Did they
tell nothing at all. Nothing at all.
Yeah.
We didn't know we were going there, so we got there, more or less.
Yeah. What was it like on the Ulster Prince? Was there much...
Well, we weren't... Ulster Prince was a packet ship, you know, that did the... Presumably either across to Belfast or Dublin, I forget now. It was... And it was quite a fast packet. So we didn't have any escort. See? Because I presume it was rather fast that it was not necessary.
Do you remember coming towards Crete? What did you see? Was it daylight?
Well, yes, but I don't remember much about it, not to be honest, not now. But we went into Souda Bay, and there was just one jetty there. And, of course, apparently the Snookers were coming over from Greece, so everything was Russian tear. We had to get off these ships and get away from the... Get away from the jetty, the port there.
They were firing at you, were they?
Well, no, Stukas were the ones that came down, dive bombers.
Right.
They'd come over, you know, perhaps three at a time. And then, of course, as I say, the Souda Bay was very deep because, and there was mountains on either side. And, of course, usually where there's mountains, the water by the side is very deep. And, of course, they were going to make this into a naval base, because with all Greece closing down. But, so we had to get out. No, Stukas were coming over, and I expect you've seen a film of them, and they used to come straight down, drop their bomb, and two or three, whatever the hell. So we had to get out and away.
Was anyone injured there at all?
No, well, not that I know of. I mean, you know, they would have had split trenches there, and if there was an air raid went, they would get in the split trench and hope for the best.
So you came straight off the ship and you were taken where?
Well, into Cania, which was then, it was spelt Canea. But, of course, now there's umpteen, there's Hania, you know, there's several different... It all depends what country you come from or what language you're talking about. And
What sort of a place was that, then?
Well, what should I say? It was very... well, to us, it looked very old, you know, very old and ancient buildings and this, that and the other. And we had... we went into billets there. They were presumably village houses which they were taken over if they were empty. And I remember, and of course we had, out there, of course we took mosquito nets with us when we went out to the Middle East. And anyway, we had to fix up these mosquito nets, and, you know, and then when we got laid down on the floor, you know, with the blankets, and then tucked around so that it didn't. Anyway, I think we were all, well, disturbed through the night, and the place apparently was invested with bedbugs, and they were all these bedbugs, they sort of bit you here, bit you there. And then they went up in the top of these mosquito nets. So anyway, the next day, you know, we complained about this. And so I think it was formalin we got. And we had to paint round the skirting boards where these bed bugs are coming from. And then we couldn't sleep the next night because it was the smell was too strong. We had to more or less... keep moving and, you know, hope for the best that we got through the night. And, as I say, but anyway, we settled down there. And then coming over on the boat, you know, because it was 8 weeks, I slipped up there. Coming over on the boat, because I was not a trained searchlight man, the Major Alexander said, I'm going to give you a job of sanitation and... orderly. And so, of course, quite a lot of the time going on the boat, we had these lectures relating to, because as possibly you may have, if you read the history, that there was more people, more soldiers killed in the First World War from disease than there was from actually, you know, being, well, from enemy action. And so, of course, they in the last war, I mean, they were creating this sanitation and et cetera. And so, of course,
what did you have to do then? What was your job?
Well, I mean, for instance, when we were in Egypt at Gaza, you know, I had about half a dozen Egyptians. We used to call them wogs. And to see to the latrines, et cetera. And of course, I had to have charge of them. I had to see that their job was done properly and this, that, and the other.
And what sort of latrines were these? Were these trenches dug in the ground?
No. They were permanent buildings. And I presume, I don't know whether we had holes and buckets. I forget now, to be honest, just how it was. I can more or less see these Egyptians cleaning them out and all this, that, and the other. Well, then, of course, when we got to Crete, I used to have to go round to the, because there was four searchlights, four batteries, and I had to go round. There was one of them right down on the quay at Souda Bay, and they spent most of there. Of course, they had split trenches to get into if there was an air raid, and I think they spent as much time. But I don't remember very much action at night, so I don't think the searchlights were necessary. But again, I don't know. I mean, talking to Arthur, the Marines, he said that there was Dornier aircraft coming over. But as I say, I don't really remember that because we were out in Kenya, and then.
There's one at Souda Bay.
Well, there's one down on Souda Bay, and then the other, I can't think, the two were on the hills, or not exactly mountains, they were quite high hills, on either side of Souda Bay, and then another one inland a little bit, but still on the top of the mountains. And I forget.
So you had to go round them all.
Oh, that's right, just to make certain that they were disposing of their cooking material and the fatty things and showing them what to do to trap the fat so that it didn't run into the ground, etc.
Okay. And how did you do that?
Well, you sort of worked it that you had some baffles, and as it came through, it came over the top on the first one and underneath on the second. So then all the fat, etc., was trapped. And then you would, you know, take that off and dispose of that in the rubbish bins.
And that would be what, in a bucket? I mean, or in...
Well, you'd more or less, when they were doing cooking, and naturally, I mean, they had, similar to your own here in your home, you see. I mean, you pull out the water out of the bowl and it runs off, and now we got, but then of course there was no sewers, etc., that you had to more or less let it run off and soak into the ground.
Right. So the baffles would be in the ground?
Oh yes, in the runaway from the sinks, you see. It would come out and, you know, like, well, in the country now, you've often got these, soakaways, they call them. Yeah. I mean, I think when we were our house at Frampton Cottrell, I got a feeling we had a soakaway there for the rainwater. But, of course, the rainwater here is taken all down into the sewers.
Yes. So that was quite an important job, really, wasn't it?
Well, yes, it was all part. And then there was another one of our chaps, Ian Sherwood, and then he was the person who had the water cart. And, of course, all the water had to be carted to these sites, You see, and of course, generally, I used to go with him. If he was going to a particular site, I'd go with him and just check on if things were reasonably satisfactory.
So what sort of a water cart was it? Was it a tank
with a, you know, on the back. Instead of having an open tube thing, it would be a water tank. And they'd fill it up in the town and then take it out to the site. And that was that until, as I say, and of course I was on the, what I call the headquarter dunes. And then, of course, as I say, there was we had a house for headquarters, and a chap by the name of Arnold Gardner, he was the telephonist. And of course he used to have to take calls from, because it was all landlines. You see, which was were really what the Germans mucked up when they invaded Crete. You know, they just cut them, and that was that. So we had, anyway, on the morning we went up to breakfast. Of course, we'd had quite a lot of bombing going on, and when we went up to breakfast, as I say, you know, there was the headquarters staff, and then I suppose about 8 o'clock, and then suddenly, round in front of the window, there was this glider. And, of course, we didn't realise it, but, of course, troops were, you know, German parachutes were coming down. And they were mainly falling on Malmö, which was across the bay from where we were. And, you know, that went on. And, you know, I mean, of course, as I say, on the first day, of course, there was the infantry troops, mainly on Crete, were Australian New Zealanders. And, of course, mainly the English people were, well, specialist units, like the AK-AK gunners and searchlights, and then people like the service, RAC, and not RAC, RAS, that's right. And so anyway, as I say, you know, we thought everything was in order because they were supposed to have killed 4,000 German parachutists on that first day. But, of course, things didn't work out. And
so did you see any parachutists coming down on this day?
Oh, well, yes, you could see them. The sky was more or less, when we got out, the sky was more or less, this particular glider landed. Of course, there were loads of rocks, etc., on Crete. You know, there was no level fields, not where we were anyway. And of course, this glider, and I think the Cretans themselves looked after the troops there. But also remember, there was a big rock, a little up on the hill there, and there was a dead German across this rock. But how long it stopped there, I don't know. But, of course, as I say, you often, a bit later on with the heat, you often got what you could smell, human flesh decaying. So, of course, that would all be found eventually. But, anyway, things went. We didn't know much about what was going on. But our cottage, air house, where Air Battery HQ, that was more or less on the side of the coast. And I used to be able to go down, you know, it's only there, well, from here to my the fence there, and take the field glasses, and I used to be able to look across to Malmö, which was the aerodrome which the Germans were trying to take. And this was a bit later on, and then these big 52 I can't think of the name of this boat. Anyway, they were Junkers 52s. One engine in the front and two either side, that they used to carry these parachutists. And then they were coming down onto, eventually, coming down onto Malmö with equipment, because the Germans had got Malmö by then. And then they'd fly off again, because they were very slow, these planes, but they had very big wings, and so they had only had a short runway to get away, and then you could see them going across just the top of the water and back to Greece and then come back again. Well, then eventually, of course, we understood that they were were giving up Crete. They knew that they were, well, the Germans were gradually getting a hold on it. And of course then troops were coming over by planes, and also they had a lot of these BMW motorcycles, whereas if you had an ordinary motorcycle, it'd be a sidecar, but there they would have a machine gun instead of a sidecar. And of course they were able to bring those over on these aeroplanes. And then of course then eventually we were told that the island was capitulating, and we'd got to move down to the south coast, Sparkia, for the Navy to pick us up. But I think that quite a lot of the troops are half, because that meant going over the mountains from the north of the island down to the south. And of course I think half of the troops were on the way there before we knew anything about it. But anyway, when we went down to get round Souda Bay, we were told you can't go round there because the Germans have got the roads. So we had to go up onto the, as you look out of Souda Bay, we were up on the left-hand side. I do know it, but I can't think. And then hoping to get across Souda Bay, you know, on a boat, and then carry on down to Sparkia. But of course, most of the boats were riddled with machine gun doings. So we were up on the left-hand side, I can't think of the name for the minute, for, you know, about 2 days.
Had you destroyed your equipment, your searchlight?
Well, we hadn't got any. We were a headquarters depot,
yeah.
But as I say, but I presume they had,
yeah, right.
You know, so I mean, that's most, yes, go on.
How many were there in the headquarters depot?
Well, I suppose about a dozen of us, really.
Right. And did you have an officer with you? Or?
Oh, well, yes. I mean, Major Alexander was there, and then you had, we had, you know, several second lieutenants. And then you had a lieutenant, you know, a full lieutenant. And you had several. Calvert was our second lieutenant in our particular little group, anyway. And then, as I say, we were up on this this side of the Souda Bay for about 2 days, I think. And then, more or less, it was decided, well, we shall have to go down and meet the Germans and see what's going to happen. We all had rifles with us, but then we took the bolts out of the rifles and threw them, so the rifles themselves were no good. But we took them down. We had orders to go down into Kenya the next morning at 7 o'clock, and they'd fixed up at the 7th General Hospital, and they'd fixed up a depot there where we had to, you know, go and meet the Germans. And then that was a place, it was just outside Kenya, and we went to We were documented again down there. And of course, you know, and then what was your civvy job? Well, of course, it was no good me turning around and saying that I was a grocer, because Germans hadn't got much food anyway. And so I thought, well, I knew a little bit about gardening, with my father being a head gardener. So I said I was a market gardener, thinking that if we got... Of course, you heard tales of the First World War, you see, which we thought of. And we naturally thought, oh, well, if I'm a market gardener and you were hungry, you could always pull a Swede up and eat it raw, sort of thing, you know, as you would an apple or something like that. But so, of course, then we went over to, eventually, we left Crete and went over to Piraeus.
Albert Hughes, end of reel 2.